Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome to the 126th Over the Monster podcast, as impromptu as podcasts get. Mark, are you there?
I am.
Great. Wow. This kind of came together quickly. So I'm Matt Corey, nowhere near the cat box, but near a cat here in Portland, Oregon. That is Mark Normandin of the internets. Mark is in the other less fun, less interesting, less beautiful Portland.
Literally none of those things are true.
Portland on Portland action, man.
I mean, if like the sun showed up there a little more often, you'd probably see it's not as cool looking as you think it is. But you know, I get it.
It's actually sunny. It's sunny right now. It's supposed to be 90 degrees this weekend. So global warming.
It goes up that high?
What?
Temperatures go up that high?
Not usually, no. Nobody here has air conditioning. So it's always a fun little sweat fest. We lose a lot of weight out here.
Really going with the hard sell for left Portland over there right now.
That's right. Yeah, go to right Portland. We don't need you. We don't want you. Go away. I think something along the lines of what their slogan ought to be for bringing people in here, because we have enough people anyway. The Red Sox are a tire fire. They are a mess, and it's 2 months into the season. So, other than
we're not going to talk about them.
Yeah, other than throwing things at the television during the game, we're going to kind of ignore that for now, in favor of something that is a bit more promising. I'm going to say I'm going to come right out with it, Mark. A bit more promising. The draft is a little more promising. The Major League Baseball's first year player draft is coming up on Monday, June 8th, and you may be hearing this at that time. I'm not sure, so that might be today, or maybe not. But in any case, the Red Sox pick 7th, which is a spot that they don't traditionally pick in, but did 2 years ago when they grabbed Trey Ball out of Indiana High School and Indiana High School. Previously, they hadn't selected that high in the draft since grabbing Trot Nixon, also out of high school, back in like, what was it?
1993.
I was going to say 94, but 93.
Also a number 7 pick.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't off the top of my head know when they've picked earlier than that, but it really doesn't matter. So anyway, they're picking 7th again, even though they were the 6th worst team in baseball last year by record. The Astros fouled that up by not signing their number 1 pick. So they get an extra pick, and then in addition to that, they sucked, and so they're also they're also up there. But anyway, that concludes the Astros portion of this podcast. Mark, you wanted to talk about the draft, and you've been doing a series at Over the Monster looking at the last 3 drafts that the Red Sox have had.
Last four drafts.
12, 13, 14, 11. Yeah, 11. And that includes Ben Cherington's first draft as GM, which I think is 2012. Can you take us through some of the highlights of that, and then we can talk a little bit about some of the guys that the Red Sox are looking at this year?
Sure. Let's start with some of the first rounders. I'm just going to stick with the Cherington stuff, since that's more kind of what we care about for Monday. So 2012 was his first one. It was the first draft that had the new draft budget and had the new compensation system. So the Sox managed to squeeze a couple extra first-round picks out because the Phillies couldn't wait to sign Jonathan Papelbon, so they were kind of grandfathered in to some extra picks. The thing that's been kind of consistent is that the Sox have done, I mean, as consistent as can be over 3 drafts, they've done well in the first round with their first-round picks. They got Devin Marrero, Brian Johnson, and Pat Light as all first-rounders, I think 24, 31, and 37 in 2012.
Oh, okay, in that one draft, right.
Yeah, and they got Trey Ball the next year, who I mean, there's two ways to look at Trey Ball, where there's a lot of people who think he's a huge disappointment, don't realize he's like 20 years old, pitching in high A and was raw to begin with. Like, this isn't a guy who's going to slowly put it together. He's probably going to, you know, things will click eventually or they won't. So you kind of have to keep waiting a little bit. And then last year they got two Michaels. They got Michael Chavis and Michael Kopech. Chavis is another guy. He's pretty raw. He's young. He's 19. He's in low A. Projects as like a first division regular. Not sure if he's a third baseman, a second baseman, or an outfielder yet, but the bat is supposed to play wherever he goes. But, you know, it's going to take some time for him to be able to put that together because, again, 19.
Yep.
And Kopech is moving
pretty well last year wherever he was. Lowell, is that where he was playing?
I think it was Lowell. It was Lowell or it was the GCL. Yeah, he's not doing so great now, but there's nothing he's doing that's particularly alarming. It's just like the kind of stuff that you fail, and then it's like, oh, if I change this, then I won't fail anymore.
Right. I mean, as a fan base, I guess, you know, having watched Mookie Betts and Xander Bogaerts go up through the minors and see them essentially never fail until they've reached the major league level, that is, those are atypical paths. You don't end up with guys who do that very often. I don't even know that, you know, having some failures in the low minors eliminates you from stardom. I mean, I was going to say maybe that tells us a little bit, but I'm not sure it tells us anything at all. I think there's probably guys who who are superstars in the major leagues who have come in and failed, in low A or whatever when they first started their careers. There's a lot of development that happens, in the minor leagues, and that's why you have the minor leagues. So,
yeah, I mean that's what kind of the criticism of Ball is. You know, he's 20. He's in his age 21 season because he was born like 3 days before the cutoff for seasonal age.
Mm-hmm.
So if he was born, you know, like 3 days later, we'd all be impressed by the fact that he's not getting destroyed in high A as a 20-year-old. But instead, you know, the perception is like, oh, he's 21. That's like the age of a college junior.
Right. So the whole thing of, about, you know, age-appropriate competition levels and stuff is an important, I think, concept, to get to understand player development. That said, he's not pitching very well at all. I mean,
you've got Michael Kopech.
That's a walk ratio of almost 1-to-1.
Yeah.
You know, his strikeouts are 28 and 53 innings pitched. He's not gotten hurt. He's not giving up a crazy amount of home runs. I mean, you know, there's certainly positives. He's a big, strong guy from a cold weather state who was a part-time, I think, pitcher in high school. So there's a whole lot of development that has to go on. But
stuff doesn't happen all at once. A fourth rounder from a few years ago, the Sox had Ty Buttrey. He was a guy, the Sox kind of structured their draft around the idea of being able to sign their three first round picks and sign Ty Buttrey, who had first round talent, but signability issues. So they get him in the fourth, sign him for like $1 million over slot. He's just 22 now, and he's pitching well in high A. But it was the same deal where he just looked like a mess. And then, you know, working through the offseason and, all that, all the kind of natural education experience that comes with actually pitching in the pros, he's doing really well now. He's right on track.
Right.
So, you know, you maybe start to panic about Trey Ball in a year or year and a half or whatever, if there's still nothing, but you know, these guys can really kind of flip quick. It's, they're working on little things kind of one at a time. If their secondaries aren't in the right place and their goal for the game is like throw your secondaries, it's going to look ugly. You know, that's why there's so many games where it's like, wow, why did he have it today? And he just doesn't have it this day. I mean, he's probably using a pitch that they knew what they were doing with in the good game. And, you know, it's all kind of a work in progress thing. So, but then you've got Michael Kopech, the other Michael from last year. He seems to be taking to low A very well. But he's also a guy who, he's 19, but he has four pitches already. And while they're not all, you know, where they need to be, he has four pitches. And they're all considered to be like potentially legitimate big league offerings. So, you know, he's a guy with a ceiling of a two. He's coming in, cleaning house in low A. They probably won't push him up too early because, you know, they got him on an innings pitch count limit. Again, 19.
Right.
But, you know, next year will probably be in high A, and maybe they'll be aggressive with him after that, depending on how he does. Maybe he'll take his lumps in high A as better hitters are seeing these pitches and have a better idea what to do with them. You know, it's all just kind of a big back and forth, but, you know, it wouldn't be surprising to see if he's a better pitcher than Ball, which is funny in its own way because, you know, the draft is weird like that where you get this guy at 33 and he might be better than the guy you got at 7.
Well, I mean, if there's one thing we know about the draft, it's that players are not selected, you know, in the order, you know, in the exact order of what their, you know, the quality of their careers winds up being. I mean, people just don't know. I mean, it's kind of impressive that we're able to get as close as we are. There's, you know, when you, especially, I think Trey Ball is a great example of this. There is so much unknown about a guy like that. And it's in a lot of ways a really risky pick, but I think one that probably, I lost my train of thought, but it's really risky because there's not, you know, there's so much development left to go, like we just talked about. So, I think it probably wouldn't have been a pick the Red Sox made in a deeper draft, but, unfortunately,
yeah, it felt like the guys they wanted came off the board and there was still this other guy they wanted, but it seems like everybody wanted from like that section of like 4 through 8 or 9 has not done well.
Right.
So apparently like this year, it's the same situation where it's like, oh man, this is the time I get to pick at 7.
Yeah. It's actually a kind of a good, you know, transition into this year's draft, unless there's more that we need to cover. I mean, I didn't intend to go through every pick that the Red Sox have made.
No, we don't have to. I just figured we'd talk about the first rounders. I mean, there is way more good than bad coming out of Charrington's drafts. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of players who might be big leaguers. I mean, I don't think they've drafted anyone who's going to be a star, but, you know, that's not going to happen where they pick, generally, anyway.
Right.
You know, the spot at 7 was maybe the chance to do it, but the guys who looked like the automatic, you know, the Chris Bryants, they were gone before they get to 7 because there's only so many of them in a given year, and, you know, they can't all be the 2005 draft or whatever.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, there's always going to be guys who are picked later on in the first round or in the second round, or frequently, I should say, there will be these guys who end up being much better than the guys who were picked ahead of them. And that's, you know, that's just the way that works. You know, the obvious example is Mike Trout was not the number one overall pick. Clearly,
yeah, I think that's like the best example. That's like the best example of you can't really criticize. They're like, well, this guy was picked 2 picks later.
Right.
It's like 24 teams watched Mike Trout go by.
Right.
This shit is hard.
Yeah. Well, my favorite bit of minutia or whatever about that is that the Angels had a pick. They had 2 picks consecutively, I believe, right? And they used the second one on Trout. Trout wasn't even selected first by the team that picked him. Basically. So let's talk a little bit about this draft, if we can.
Sure.
You have indicated to me that, and I'm ignoring all this stuff. You've indicated to me that, you know, there's a like that draft that Ball was selected in. There's sort of a group of guys who are kind of clustered at the beginning of the draft that it's a little unclear exactly where guys are going to go. There's no Bryce Harper. There's no Steven Strasburg. And so, you know, with maybe one or two exceptions, pretty much anybody could fall to the Red Sox. Including a couple guys they've actually drafted before. Maybe we should start with those guys. Go ahead.
So in Charrington's first draft, in the 15th round, he drafted Carson Fulmer, a right-handed pitcher, and Alex Bregman, shortstop at 29. They didn't sign either of those guys, in part because they signed Ty Buttrey with all the draft budget rules. You know, not signing Buttrey would have been more of a penalty than not signing guys they drafted outside the first 10 rounds. So, you know, Buttrey it was when the money wasn't close on Fulmer, Bregman. They both went to college. But now they have a chance to get, you know, Buttrey plus one of those guys, possibly. Bregman's a shortstop for LSU. It's kind of a question about whether he's going to stick there. I should say that, like, anything I'm saying is, you know, secondhand or whatever. It's not.
Right.
I did not fly down and watch LSU play or anything.
Right, right.
You know, he's supposed to be a pretty decent hitter. But that, you know, he's just a much more valuable player if he can stick it short. So that's your kind of your question. The problem is every guy that's going to fall to the Sox at seven, there is the question of, well, they could be better as so long as this bad thing doesn't happen.
Right. Yeah. There's no. Well, at least based on the way that we have that you know people are talking about
yeah.
it now, there's no star quality guy that they're going to grab probably.
Yeah. I mean, even a few weeks back, the Diamondbacks, who have known they've had the first pick overall for you know since they finished with the worst record, they were still figuring out who it was they were going to pick first, and they were thinking about just saving money so that they could spend money later in the draft because it's a deep draft. It just has there are no obvious stars. It's like a one where normally the Red Sox, if they were picking 20th, 25th, whatever, like they often do,
mm-hmm.
they'd make out so well. You know, if this was one of the years where they had a couple of picks, a couple of first rounders late, you know, they do well like they did last year, but it's not. So you kind of have to deal with what you've got. Fulmer, the other guy, the righty, is at Vanderbilt. The question with him is he going to be a starter? But he has the upside of a possible number two starter, and maybe he's a guy who can get fast-tracked to the majors through the bullpen, maybe spend a couple of years there, like do his development there, essentially.
Right.
And if they think he can start, you know, you switch him to starting. He's an intriguing guy because he seems like the one most likely to be a major leaguer out of everyone.
Fulmer.
Yeah, and there's value in that.
Sure.
How good of a major leaguer he'll be is the thing that's the question, but it's, you know, they think he'll be in the majors. So, you know, those two guys are fascinating, but it sounds like, you know, based on what everyone's doing with their mocks, the Sox want a hitter, so Fulmer, their interest in him might have waned a little bit from where it maybe was a month or so ago.
Right.
And they really want Bregman, but Bregman is a guy who, because everything's so unsettled, like he could go second, he could go third, you know, fifth, sixth, whatever, like
yeah.
might not last until seven.
Yeah. Kylie McDaniel, who writes prospects for Fangraphs, has been doing a pretty impressive job with this draft. He just came out with a replacement post mock draft. So he just covered the first like eight picks or something, which includes the Red Sox. And he did that this morning. And he has Bregman going second to the Astros. And he has Fulmer following past the Red Sox. So the Red Sox, according to him, have the option to draft Fulmer, but would opt not to. I'll be honest, I'm not that up on this particular guy that he has. Andrew Benintendi from Arkansas, a college center fielder, I believe. Another guy who's kind of an interesting name who McDaniel has going right ahead of that is Daz Cameron, who's a center fielder from Eagles Landing Christian High School in Georgia. And that is the son of Mike Cameron. Boy, that was too hard. Anyway,
funny, they project to be very, very different players, even though they're both center fielders.
Is Benintendi more of a power hitter and Cameron is more of a spray speed kind of guy?
Oh, I meant the Camerons, Mike and...
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Like, there's supposed to be less swing and miss in the Suns game, but he's not the center fielder that Dad was.
Okay.
Yeah, with Benintendi, his bat isn't really the question. It's can he stick in center? So it's like the Bregman situation, except in the outfield.
Right, right.
Because they don't know, you know, is he going to hit enough if he moves off a center?
Mm-hmm.
Same deal with, you know, if you have to move Bregman somewhere, is he going to hit enough?
Right.
So, Yeah, nobody's perfect in this. And I mean, Cameron comes with his own set of problems just because he's a high schooler. And,
right,
you know, right there, you already, like, as we talked about with Ball and those guys, you know, it's a, you see the tools and you hope they grow the way that you're seeing them, but they don't always. And sometimes it takes a while. And, you know, the Sox have the time, obviously. They're loaded with outfield prospects or whatever. They've got young guys manning the positions now, but, and, you know, Dreffer need anyway. Best available and all that. But, you know, it's just one more kids. Young high school guy they're used a first-round pick on. So I'd be kind of surprised if they went that way.
Yeah, Cameron is an intriguing guy because he sounds more like your prototypical, and he's not going to get this far at all, but I don't think, a prototypical Phillies draft pick. He's kind of all tools at this point. You know, strength and speed. My understanding is he's about as close to a 5-tool player as this draft gets, and his big problem has been turning that into production on the field. You know, and he's in high school, and he's not had a particularly good season. And I don't know what that means either. That's just things I've read. I'm like you. I'm repeating things I've read. So. But, you know, he was under consideration to go first overall. So was Michael Mattuella. I think I'm saying that correctly. A pitcher. And this brings up an interesting point, too. Mattuella is a pitcher at Duke University who I think he needs Tommy John, or he had another injury that requires surgery and he's going
to
miss.
He had Tommy John.
Okay.
Or he's scheduled to have it. But he also has a back condition.
Okay.
Which makes him.
Question.
Also frightening.
Right.
Because it's like, okay, even if his elbow's fine, it's a young pitcher with a back problem, and back problems don't get better.
Generally, no, yeah. And that's kind of the interesting thing about this draft, if there is anything interesting about this draft, is, you know, what is the effect of injuries on these young pitchers? I mean, we've seen, Lucas Giolito, who was drafted, I think, right before or right after having Tommy John surgery by the Nationals. And he's one of the best pitching prospects in baseball at this point. And so I fully expect someone's going to, you know, unless the medicals are really grim, someone's going to make a leap on a guy like Mattuella or the other guy I'm thinking of who
Brady Aiken,
last year's number one overall pick who didn't sign with the Astros, because of his medicals. And shortly after that, he was injured, and I believe Tommy John surgery for him also. Is that correct?
Yes. Okay. What's interesting about that for Aiken, the Astros eventually relented and offered him the original, not the original money, but offered him $5 million on the last day. He
right.
turned it down, chose to bet on himself, and now he had Tommy John surgery.
Right.
So someone might pick him in the first round, and he might do the Carsten Witten thing and turn it down. And, you know, enter a later draft in the hopes that he can recover his stock. We'll see how that goes. The Sox were supposedly linked to him, but it was all based on how his medicals looked. And since no mock draft has mentioned it since, I'm going to guess they didn't look super great. That's entirely an inference, though. You know, no idea if that's actually the case. They might really want
to
bat.
I can speak to that based on something that Kylie McDaniel posted, which is that he hasn't seen the medical specifically, but his understanding is that they're not as bad as were feared. And so he's expecting Aiken to go in the middle of the first round and potentially higher depending on how things go over the weekend. So that puts him, you know, just behind where the Sox would be picking. I don't know, obviously, what the Red Sox think of him, but it's certainly an intriguing name, no question about it. Getting the guy who went 1-1 overall at 7 is, you know, that's intriguing. Now, if he's going to be hurt and can't pitch in the major leagues, that doesn't do anyone any good. So you got to weigh all that out for sure.
And there's a secondary concern there, too, which is if Aiken chooses a bet on himself again, and won't sign, you know, the Sox lose the draft slot budget associated with the 7th pick.
Well, you know, that's true.
they do get a pick back next year.
Exactly. And so,
but it's kind of a, if they had plans to offer Aiken a certain percentage of the seventh pick's value,
yeah,
and we're going to use some of that money elsewhere, that option's out of the table, off the table.
So that is a big concern, because you lose the money that is slotted for that pick. So the Red Sox would lose the vast majority of their draft budget this year.
Especially because they don't have a second round pick and there's no extra firsts.
And next year they're not going to be signing anybody on the international market, likely of significant quality, because of blowing past their draft budget this year with Yoan Moncada. So I don't know. The other thing about that, though, is that next year's draft is supposed to be a much stronger draft, like much stronger than this draft.
Harder not to be.
Well, right, exactly. A stronger draft than average. So taking a chance on a guy like Aiken and then seeing him not signed, that sucks in the moment for sure. But a seven pick, or it would be an eight pick next year, in addition to whatever pick the Red Sox would get based on this year, would be potentially more valuable, or could be.
Yeah, the could be and the potentially is what's key there too, because, I mean, not that this draft this year was ever supposed to be fantastic, but it looked a whole lot better 2 months ago. And then tons of people started getting hurt, and some other people had bad seasons, and all of a sudden it was just a mess. So, you know, none of these drafts are bulletproof. The Sox could do that. All, you know, it could look like a good plan, and they could end up in a similar situation with just a different year attached to it. And Aiken might block them from redrafting or anything like that if he does bet on himself and comes back strong.
Yeah, it's interesting, and I think it entirely depends on what the Sox see in those medicals and what their discussions are with Aiken's representation. I, for whatever it's worth, not much. I haven't heard anybody talk about Aiken not signing if he's picked in the first round. Now, of course, that doesn't mean anything really, other than I just haven't heard it. But that's, McDaniel hasn't said anything to my knowledge about that. Neither has, Jim Callis or any of the other guys doing the mocking mocks. It'll be interesting, as it always is, on draft day on Monday. And I think also, they're spreading it out over multiple days, aren't they?
Yeah, I think the first round and the sandwich rounds and maybe the second are on Monday.
Yeah.
But I don't even know if the second's on Monday, honestly. They changed things.
Yeah.
They didn't used to be at night either.
They're trying to ESPN it, I think. They're trying to make it a TV event, whereas it's really interesting or really funny, actually, the way that MLB used to do the draft. Like, if you think about the NFL football draft and how – that's like a giant event and fans attend it and cheer and boo and all that stuff. Major League Baseball used to do the draft over the phone, and they would have this giant book of prospects with their numbers. They're like draft numbers or whatever, which are sort of like seemingly randomly assigned. And they would just announce the number and the name over the phone of this giant conference call. Like
you still hear that on the second day.
Do they
second
do it
day
the second
flies
day?
By? Yeah, it's Oakland A's pick, whoever number designation school, Then the next team just fire.
Yeah, it's rapid.
But that's because there's 40 plus rounds. So once it's not on TV anymore, they go back to the, it's kind of just flying through the whole thing.
Yeah, Skype that shit.
I mean, I don't mind that they're televising it and everything. It's cool to get the exposure, and you get a little more information about who these guys are. MLB's also stepped up their game, making sure they have a lot of videos and scouting reports for all these players on their website.
Yeah.
So it's cool. If you want to follow along on TV and online, you can. And it's helpful to, we're talking about everything we've talked about here, essentially, as far as this draft goes, has been secondhand information from people who have actually seen this stuff. So I'm all for absorbing, more information about these guys and figuring out who they are and where they fit into Boston's plans.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I'm with you too. I just think it's it's kind of funny the turnaround that has happened over like the last
years
or something. In any case, unless there's something else that I'm going to throw this caveat at you that is not Red Sox related.
You know, I'm pretty glad that I've been writing about the team at the major league level too, but I spent a lot of time in the minors this year. It's been kind of nice to just be like, well, today I'm writing about the minors again. That's
right.
Good.
Right. Yeah, the Sea Dogs are not really, like, I guess, that great this year, but there's a wave of prospects coming that, you know, maybe later this year and definitely next year.
Yeah,
but pretty interesting.
By the end of the season, I think the roster will look a lot better. I'm disappointed that the Sox traded Joe Gunkel to get Alejandro Deaza.
Oh, so upset about that.
Gunkel's going to be a reliever. It's like, I'm not suggesting they gave up like a super awesome arm or something like that.
He's Joe Gunkel.
He's got that name. But also, you know, he's pitching in the Portland rotation, so it was nice to be able to see him.
Yeah.
And see someone who might actually be in the majors pitching in that rotation. So now it's just Carlos Asuaje, who, I mean, I like Asuaje a lot. I probably like him more than anybody, except for people who work for the Red Sox.
And maybe Mrs. Asuaje.
I don't know. I don't know if there's a Mrs. Asuaje.
I meant his mom.
Oh, okay.
I think he's like 19, isn't he?
He's 23.
Is he? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but maybe there is. I don't know. I like him. He's a disciplined hitter. I mean, one thing you love to see in the minors, and it's fun, you know, if you see enough minor league baseball, you'll see a lot of bad minor league baseball.
Yes.
So you really start to see the difference between...
Maybe even bad major league baseball, too.
You really start to see the difference between people who draw walks because they're, like, sitting there praying for a walk, and people who draw walks because they actually worked it.
Lars Anderson in the first part.
Yeah, there's those passive guys. I mean, Cicchini's going through that right now at AAA.
Wrote about that this today, as a matter of fact.
He's almost struck out as many times looking in like a quarter of the season as he did last year. It's
so
absurd. But
the Red Sox spent a first round pick on Lars Anderson, whatever it was, 2007 or I don't know. And, you know, big left-handed slugging first baseman, you know, has the good face, et cetera, except, and, you know, and was very patient at the plate. As you point out, it wasn't really patience. It was passivity, but in any case, and, you know, his career kind of fizzled out at the upper minors. He just, you know, never was able to take that step towards actually, you know, swinging hard and hitting hittable pitches. Interestingly, the Red Sox traded Anderson, I guess when he was still a semi-prospect or pretty – I don't know. I don't recall him ever having any value by the time he left the Red Sox organization. But in any case –
Yeah, I mean, I think he got traded when he was designated.
Okay.
So
they traded him. Do you know who they traded him for?
Yeah, Stephen Wright.
Stephen Wright, yes! That's awesome!
I wasn't sure if you were going to go with this story or last month Lars Anderson went 0-7 in a AAA game.
Oh, really?
And but then it went 17 innings. That's why he went 0-7.
Yeah.
So no one was hitting.
Right.
Right. And then he ended up pitching. He got the win.
Whoa, good for Lars Anderson. I was always a fan of his. I mean,
it's a shame he didn't work out, you know.
Him and Jason Place, man. Those were going to be the guys.
You know, it doesn't happen sometimes, but it's those, you know, I swear, so you see more minor league baseball, you really start to like last year, after Devin Marrero got promoted from AA to AAA, you started to get even more of an appreciation for Devin Marrero's defense because the people who replaced him were not Devin Marrero.
Right, right.
It's, you know, it's not pretty. Like, when minor league baseball is bad, it is awful. I mean, I love it. I love going and I love seeing it because, you know, even if Portland's lineup's not, you know, as good as it was last year, it is cool seeing, like, Asuaje, who is just, I mean, he's the shortest dude in the team by a long shot, but he's also like head and shoulders above everybody else in terms of ability. And he might, you know, he might just be like a really good bench player in the majors. But you can see there's such a stark contrast between guys who will be in the majors and guys who won't.
Right, right, right. Yeah.
And you don't even need to be a scout to really notice it.
Well, yeah. When you're talking about a stark difference. Yeah. I think, not to start talking about this, I guess, but, you know, the thing that a lot of that is really difficult for scouting is you know, like pre-professional scouting. Like, what should we spend a first round pick on Lars Anderson and Jason Place? Going back in time, the answer is no.
But I don't know. You got Stephen Wright out of it.
That's true. Yeah.
Major league starter now. So.
Anyway. All right.
That worked. That worked.
We're done. I've got things to do. You've got things to do. Congratulations, by the way, Mark, publicly on your things to do. Couldn't have happened to a nicer guy.
I mean, it probably could have, but.
No, not at all. So thanks for listening to this impromptu Red Sox draft podcast. Because of Mark's things to do, my guess is we won't be back to discuss this anytime soon, although maybe I'll have Brendan on. Brendan's got a new job where he's working a lot, and so it's been a little difficult to coordinate schedules. But Brendan is awesome, and so maybe we can make it work and have a post-draft podcast. And maybe even drag like Chris Hatfield on and talk draft there. So we'll try to get something up for you hashtag content wise for the post draft stuff. And of course there will be lots of stuff at Over the Monster about the draft and the guys the Red Sox select. So you can go right there. So anyway, that's Mark. I'm Matt. And thanks again for listening, everybody. Have a great weekend or week if you're listening to this on Monday. Bye. End episode.